Welcome to the upstreamlife.com. I love talking about HR practices in the country and how technology is changing HR. I've got the OG of HR with me. I've got Mr. K. Pandyarajan, who's going to tell us how HR has been changing for the last four decades. Mr. Pandyarajan is a man of many colors. He's also been a politician. He's also sold a business in the past. So that makes him an original entrepreneur in India. Mr. Pandyarajan, welcome.
Thank you.
So it's my pleasure. I've known you for, I've always spoken to you on the phone in 2005-06, but we only happen to meet now. It's been such a long career for you, and I've been following you. What a success. Tell me a little bit about your childhood. How did you get into all this?
Yeah, I'm from a place called Milampatti. It's a village near Shivakasi, born to a worker in a match factory. Shivakasi, as you know, is a place where place of crackers and other cracks, as they used to call. So my father worked in a match factory, and I was the only son for my parents. Lost my father very early in life, 3 months, largely a child of the society. Grew up the hard way, but in a joint family, and did my engineering, did my MBA from XLR Jamshedpur, and worked for 9 years, and then became an entrepreneur, starting the company called Morpho. Morpho is something which we both founded, Lata, my wife, and myself. We founded that way back in 92, August 15th, and mainly that was the time, as you know, the Indian industry, there was major impact of what they used to call as LPG, the liberalization, privatization, globalization. And since until then, HR as a concept was really, recruitment. If you were to really see, there were 10,000 players in this country. Everybody, most of them were one-man armies, and with some clients, some candidates, and placed them in niches. Okay, that was what it used to be. They used to be even called as placement agencies
back then,
in those days.
And I mean, just to paint the picture for the younger audience watching, yeah, this, those who are 28 would obviously not have been born in 92. So I wanted to know India obviously had a rich history of these FMCG companies. There were these large engineering PSUs. Recruitment would have happened in what format, and the and the hiring would have been very different, right? Yeah, it would have been absolutely. Always newspaper ads.
Absolutely. You know, where, newspapers in those days used to carry, Hindu Opportunities used to be some 10 pages, 20 pages. Times of India was very big at that point in time. And recruitment advertising was an industry by itself, you know, for largely print media at that point in time, and the pre-social media days. And you know, we were one of the first to, in a way, organize the industry. You know, we professional recruitment, which used to be an oxymoron in those days, we kind of introduced that into this country. And we were pioneering the idea of flexi staffing, you know, what is known as staffing.
Even
today.
Back in 92?
Even, we were the 92 September, our first deputy happened, which was an overseas deputation we did for Foster Wheeler, an EPC company. And, you know, our beginning was, let's engineer your future overseas. That was a punchline for the first ad.
Oh, you take Indians overseas.
Indian engineers overseas, mainly engineers, EPC industry, and largely process and power industries is what we were servicing at that time.
Very because India had that talent, right? Because
India had that talent.
Civil
India
was very big, EPC like, was big.
Before IT discovered this, what they used to call in those days as body shopping. You know, there was a lot of body shopping which was happening in the engineering consulting industry, which is what we were getting into. The IT boom happened very quickly after that. And of course, it became 10 times, 100 times more than EPC. But the EPC niche is what we were starting.
Always
our,
good at.
Starting okay. our industry.
Yeah. I think not many people again realize 97, the IT boom just took off in this country.
Yeah.
And after 1999, even bigger with Infosys.
Yeah, with Y2K. Yes. You know, Y2K happening at that point in time.
Did you migrate your services?
Absolutely.
To
you know, we began with Apple Computers, which came into the country in the year 94. And we were exclusively retained by them and to recruit almost 250 people for Apple. And that was a very big thing, you know, with five directors and everybody, the entire software development team for Apple Development Incorporated. And of course, we had clients like Monsanto in different industries, well, DuPont and all that. So it really took off, and we set ourselves a target of growing 100% every year.
How do you manage that? You said you came from a humble family.
Yeah.
A match worker or in Shivkasi, and how do you develop the chops for entrepreneurship? Yeah. Especially in Indian at the time, very difficult. A road to entrepreneurship was not considered even a mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, we had what is now known as crowdsourcing at that point in time. We had 276 investors in those days itself. Between 92 and 2000, we picked up equity from friends, relatives, employees, employers. You know, we picked up equity from them, and we kept on growing, you know, till 2000, when we were the first company to raise venture capital in those days, which is a very different animal at that point in time. There were three things which we leveraged powerfully: the idea of business model, the idea of value, and the idea of venture capital. All the three of them, we were pioneers in this country to leverage on. In 2000, we evolved a very different business model. The dot-com time happened. We were the first dot-com in the HR space, and we were also the first to raise venture capital. 8.5 crores in those days was heavenly from three VCs. All the three were new to VCing, in the sense we had this company called...
What was your pitch? I mean, was there an elevator pitch? Like, a lot of young people are used to these elevator pitches.
Yeah, that time it was very clear. We were the first in HR to come into the dot-com world. Mm-hmm. And the dot-com will come with a business model where we will be candidate-centric, as distinct from client-centricity at that point in time. And we had by then 10 crore turnover, which was the largest in this industry at that point in time. An industry which now is 1,76,000 crores, which at that time with a 10 crore, you can be market leader. Okay, so that was what we were at that point in time. And we were also one of those who very clearly dovetailed with the rest of the world. We had at that time clients in about 18 countries in the year 2000, when we were a 10 crore company.
And a lot of people don't realize that. How do you manage when you're managing offshore, right? There was a lot of bank accounts that you had to take permission from the RBI, right? For money transfers.
Yeah, yeah. 2000, we started setting up the international operations. In those days, yes, RBI was a lot more intrusive than what it is currently. And at that time, when we raised the 8.5 crores, we started setting up international offices. We started Singapore, Dubai, New Jersey and London, all the four offices I started simultaneously. While we spent half of the money in brand building, we were the first company in this industry to start building a brand. The Morpho brand became the most salient in the country. It had a 7% top of the mind recall in the country.
At that time,
at that point in time. And the closest to us was a company which was at 1%. Okay. And when the multinationals started coming in by the year 2004, we were the first to bring a multinational into this country, a company called VDOR from Netherlands.
Which later got acquired.
Came in, invested in us. They took over the shares of all these 276 players. Mm-hmm. And every one of them got returns of between 14 to 24 times what they invested. But the investment was very small. Some people have put even 3,000 rupees. Okay. And the largest investment was around 40 lakhs at that point in time. But all of them were happy investors, and they moved on. And the three VCs also, they got picked up by them.
It's like managing a syndicate.
Yeah, it's like you're managing a syndicate. But it's very interesting.
And tell me those days. I mean, these 276 people would call you?
Yeah, yeah. They would, some of them from a village, they all built houses, which the name of my wife put there. Where my Lata was the interface with the investors.
Okay.
And she's a chartered accountant. And she kind of... she was, in a way, the person who was giving them the returns. Every year, we used to pay 20% dividend. And after the VCs came in, we increased it to 32% dividend.
So, that's these processes. There's something that I want Indian entrepreneurs to realize today, in an era where capital is available.
Yeah.
There is excessive scale. Mm. But there is no focus on process. How did you manage that from day one? Did you say to yourself that, look, I want to build a company in the long run? How do you say to yourself that even in bad times, I will still stick to process?
Absolutely.
What are some of the crazy things that happened to you? You can share those examples. Yeah, tough times, but I still manage process.
For instance, we began with the statement, our mission, Morpho's mission, is to emerge as the most respected HR service provider in the world, anchored on values of dignity, diversity, growth and professionalism. This is something which we said, and we ensured that every one of the members of MAFA internalized these values into themselves. I mean, we had institutional meets, we had management council meets, every one of them we invested in, even when we were a small company. And once the VCs invested, we actually increased the investment in our people. In fact, we were clearly positioning ourselves as a premium company at that point in time. And after 2004, when Vidyor came in,
yes,
and the VCs went out, there was a 4-year run where we set up operations in about 18 countries. We were in Middle East, Southeast Asia, US, UK and China. All of these places we were deeply present.
Okay.
And that gave us a window to the world. And for many of our people, it was a tremendous career boost for them. Guys who were working as head of Mumbai, the guy became the head of Middle East. The one who was working as head of Bangalore went and took charge in Singapore. And the person who was heading my search business went to London and took charge of Europe. You know, this is the kind of career growth we could give to our people. And we were always focused on co-creating the organization. I had a team of faithfuls, the 9 of them, my dear DRs who were reporting to me, who were really, anchored in the company like a pillar, you know, for me. So that investment has paid off. So we became a 1,000 crore company in an industry, whereas a 10 crore company, we could be market leaders.
Yeah.
And we also pioneered the multinationals who came into the country. What started as a trickle in the year 2004. Now, there are 12 of them who have come into India, either through a JV or through a direct presence for themselves. And an industry which, when I left, Vidyor, as you rightly said, got acquired by Randstad, which is world's largest in the HR service.
Which you went on to head in India as well.
That's right. Yeah. For about 3 years, I was their chairman in the country.
Yes.
And so 2010, when the end of the year, we sold the company, where I also went into politics
at that point in time. That's a different journey. We should cover it. I'll jog back your memory. It's interesting. You spoke about process.
Yeah.
You spoke about why you have to have a team that follows
you.
How do you make sure that they stick to you, sir? I mean, psychologically, entrepreneurship is hard. You know, you have shops now that say, okay, you're going through a startup burn. Mm. There are doctor clinics that are coming up to treat you as mental fitness.
Yeah.
In your time, there was nothing as mental fitness.
Mm.
You know, how do I stay true to what I'm running?
Mm.
How did you manage that? How did you manage stress at the time? Is it just the belief that I can do something?
Yeah.
Are you okay to share vulnerabilities? I mean, today people say share vulnerabilities, build trust. But in India, it's a very hierarchical structure. You cannot show that you're vulnerable. So I wanted your thoughts on this.
Yeah. See, if you see the phases of movement of MAFA, in the first phase, when we were purely an entrepreneurial growing company, there were many external impacts which got created in the company. Even when we were a small sprouting plant of a company in the year 92, all that we borrowed, all that we put in almost 10 lakhs into my overseas visits. I visited every country because at that time I had a good base in the EPC companies around the world. So 18, 19 countries, I went and picked up all the inquiries, came here, built a team, tried delivering. Over 7,000 profiles we had reached across to these hundreds of companies across. And then came Babri Masjid, December 7th.
Yeah,
and
when
the Babri Masjid fell, for almost 1 year, the Middle East countries and also Malaysia and Indonesia, many of the countries banned Indian manpower for 1 year. So like all the effort went down the drain and I had to manage the team here. I ended up borrowing left, right and center. It's something in Chennai called meter vatti. You know, meter vatti means interest which gets counted
like auto rickshaw meter.
I had borrowed money at some 80-90% and all that at that point in time to survive. And you know, that was the one which gave me the grit to move into a whole lot of other things, whatever we can do ourselves. We went and did compensation and benefit surveys, went and did even market survey at some point in time. You remember the kind of survival which the team of, by the time the team had become 25-30 people at that point in time. So it was like a phenomenal thing where everybody was rising to the occasion. I think we diversified into all kinds of things at that point in time. That if today we are in the HR value chain, all the eight elements, it is because of that stress of at that time having to manage things. And in my view, that was also the time we started raising equity, you know, from people. The crowdsourcing was out of necessity, in my view. And then, of course, happened the dot-com phase, where, of course, we suddenly the dot-com, which went up like that, went down like this within a year and a half, if you were to really look at. Many companies which raised VC after seeing us raise venture capital, 15 of them died in that period.
That.
Only two survivors were Morpher and Naukri.
Yeah.
Naukri, as you know, is now a unicorn. Par excellence, $3 billion valuation and all that. We had a break because we did a strategic investment.
Because what it was, you all, I mean, I think Randstad acquired the Dutch company for $5.4 billion, if I remember
correctly. Yeah, but that was the whole, whole of video. But, you know, we couldn't make anything because we had earlier sold ourselves to video and we bear the pioneer's cross.
Correct.
Okay, where the valuations were not very high in the year 2004, for instance, when they came in. And in 2008, when Randstad came into acquiring Video, it was a largely a hostile acquisition at that point in time. And it took place over a period of time. And I was running for the parliament in the year 2009. So I was, in a way, moving into another universe.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, as it happened, we didn't really make a great deal of money for a 1,000 crore company, which 72,000 deputies and 2,000 permanent employees with eight aspects of HR value chain, our presence. I think we got very, very poor valuation at that point in time because of the circumstances of the exit at that point in time. But I think one of the things I did was to buy the brand back. And the brand is now mine, the Morpher brand. And we created four new organizations, Morpher Strategy, Morpher Analytics, and Morpher Education, along with the Varam Microfinance, which we created because we had a lot of self-help group. We pioneered the self-help group movement in Tamil Nadu. And like we kind of leveraged to create a MFI, a microfinance institution called Varam.
I want to get into detail in that. But I want to make one compliment to you. In 2005, when the retail revolution was happening in India, and I was commissioned a story to talk about the new green revolution with retail.
Yeah.
And guess what? My editor at the time, Jahangir Pochhar, 2006 time frame, he just said, one is an international firm, I won't name them. Then he just said, why don't you just call Morpher? Because they're the ones who'll place senior leadership. Yeah. And you guys had specialized in that space. Some of the big leaders in today's industries have been placed by Morpher. Right?
You see, the first company to create a separate executive search subsidiary was Morpher in the country. Morpher Search, Global Search Solutions. Where we had placed over 2,000 leaders in the country within that initial period of 18 years. We had placed over 2,000 people, CXOs, CEOs, and things like that. And that has really helped us when we create our new avatar. You know, after the three-year period where we can't get into recruitment and staffing, we created CLHR, which is the parent company.
When was
CIEL
born?
CIEL was born in the year 2015. And after we got the brand rights for Morpher.
You had to buy it back?
Yeah, we had to buy it back and it had, of course, a long legal issues and all that. There was an arbitration which we won. So finally, it got assigned to me in the year 2019 only. But we had to start recruitment and staffing after the three-year no-compete kind of a thing. So we started CLHR in the year 2015 and within the last 9 years, we've emerged as the one of the top eight companies in the industry. You know, where when I sold the company last time, it was 1,000 crore company in a 10,000 crore industry with a 10% market share.
Yes.
While when we restarted, the industry had really boomed to a 1 lakh crore industry.
You know, tenfold.
With many investments through the stock exchange.
And a lot of tech companies coming in also.
Much of HR tech play had happened.
Yes.
And I think 12 of the multinationals have come in by that time. You know, you were starting from Adecco, Manpower, you had...
I've met Adecco.
Everybody was there. Everybody has come in.
I think that some of them come and gone also.
Yeah, very few of them have gone in Japan. You know, you had companies from Japan, Europe and US, yeah, all of them have come into this country. And more importantly, some of the indigenous companies have grown large enough to be listed in the stock exchanges. So public money has come in, yes, private equity has come in into this industry. So today this is transformed into a 1,76,000 crore industry, yeah, with 9 distinctive segments,
absolutely,
you know, temp staffing, permanent staffing. And
yeah, there's blue collar, white collar, they've HR, done all those segmentations.
Yeah, HR, tech and consulting,
yes,
we call it consulting and tech, mm-hmm, solutions kind of a thing. So this 9-year growth again has been, in this of course the spearhead was the people who used to work for me earlier. Aditya and Santosh, who have become the pioneer, you know, progenitors of CLHR. And after the last elections 3 years back, yes, I decided to quit politics and come back to
come
business.
Come back in entrepreneurship again.
Anyway, I was holding a 80% share in the companies which have been created. Now we have in a way reorganized all of them, that yeah, CLHR is the spearhead,
so
for the
because it's also a tech company, it's
yeah,
also a consulting company,
that's
it's
right,
also a staffing company.
That's right, right. And a SSR, as we call, search, selection and
do you want to name
RPO,
those 8 companies or those primary companies?
No,
that you want to focus,
yeah, CLHR
on?
Is primarily into recruitment and
yes,
staffing. Zombie is an acquired company,
yes,
with a leadership position in assessment and digital leadership development. It's a completely 100% digital first organization, which today has been able to push down multinationals like Thomas Profiling, which is worldwide leaders,
yeah,
but in India Zombie is the leader. So that in the assessment space, we have now a very clear niche. We've come up with programs like the Women Leadership Program, 1000 Women Leaders Program. We're now, the first program we ran itself had 1,174 women leaders going through a 4-month program. And very, very deep connect we have with the HR community. We're the one who started 30 under 30, 40 under 40 HR Leaders Program. We've launched the CHRO of the Future Program. From the entry level up to the CHRO level, we are now having a deep connect with the HR community in the country. We have MOFA, the old MOFA, which I have a restriction in using the MOFA brand for recruitment and staffing. So we are using the MOFA brand for consulting, mainly advisory as we call. And also we have payroll and compliance, which is a large business for us earlier. That business I had sold to ADP.
Yes.
World's largest in this sector. What ADP began in India and payroll is with a team of 300 people who went to them here in India. Even though the leadership, the CEO is from ex-MOFA. And like the payroll and compliance, we've now started the recreating. Now we are one of the top 10 players in the payroll and compliance in India, which is done under the MOFA brand. We also have a company called RG Staffing, which we acquired in the IT staffing domain, which is lending a great strength in our professional staffing domain. We have acquired, we are in the process of acquiring another company, which is in the digital learning platform space, which should lend a lot more strength to our HR tech story, which will be spanning the whole range of engagement surveys, OD, coaching, leadership development and assessment.
Okay.
So this is the range of stuff that we're doing currently. And we also have a CL Tech, which is mainly meant for managed services for IT and auto industries.
Managed services, managing these organizations
people
coming into it for the first time.
One. And two, also basically the EPC professional staffing, we are clocking under the CL Tech. Yeah,
anyways,
we've started that again.
Okay.
I would imagine healthcare will happen now, and also logistics and manufacturing, you're setting a separate practice. The idea of when the opportunity came from the government for NAPS, you know, the apprenticeship scheme in this country has been revolutionized through the scheme called National Apprenticeship Promotionship Scheme.
Yes.
We are one of the 10 licensed third party aggregators in the country. We have almost 6,000 people on our rolls, which who are working as apprentices with some of the leading Indian organizations. So anything new which happens in HR, we would be pioneering that. We would be participating in that ahead of anybody else. So though we are number 8 in this industry currently, with a turnover of around 1,100 crores, which is, you know, which is the highest I've ever reached in my earlier phase. 1,000 is what I've reached in the earlier phase. So today at 1,100, I'm number 8. Okay,
yes.
See the way the industry has grown in a phenomenal way. We've been doing a CAGR of around 51% over the last 5 years. But the industry has been growing at around 15%.
Okay.
So we are growing at least three times the industry growth rate as such.
Okay.
And that growth is embedded in the organization.
Okay. Sir, you've given me a vision of CLHR. It is amazing. But I want to know, what does a modern organization want today? I talk to manufacturers, they talk industry 4.0. I talk to construction companies, they talk digital first. They say they talk digital twins. You know, we want experts. Then, you know, people also in the services side, in the media side, they'll say we need digital marketing experts, leadership. And then we come to IT, it's very different now. They're saying AI is coming in. How do we integrate AI and people?
Yeah.
You know, some of my clients keep saying, no, we are people first, but we will use AI to change our industry. But they're also scared what happened. So what should we address first? The software in the room and the AI in the room, or is it going to be people relevant all the time? Your thoughts on this?
No, I think in terms of companies whom we deal with, while the digital first movement or the tech integration has been across the board spoken about, I think there's a great movement towards bringing in strong integrative systems, especially in the performance management.
Yes.
Okay, like you know this idea of OKR, which is objectives and key results, which has been behind most of the tech giants of today, Google, even Microsoft,
yes,
in many, many senses. I see, especially with a certain element of transience happening in organizations, transience as in companies are not really built to last, companies are built to value. You know, the next valuation determines where you are. The longevity of companies is a thing of the past. Companies are transforming big time, where I see very quick anchoring along objectives and key results, which is becoming a key need I see. They are deploying technology in terms of, you know, see the demand for HRMS of every kind. There's one HRMS guy who has become even a unicorn. Darwin Box, if you really were to see.
Yes.
And, you know, this industry has created three unicorns already in the HR services.
Darwin Box is a well-known name. Yeah,
Darwin Box, or even InfoEdge, which is the
Infoedge,
a unicorn of sorts. And
been Apna, around for a while.
Apna and things like that. So I really see very quick anchorage along OKRs, the objectives and key results, as a key need, where the technology is blended with the human aspects, and they need to be doing it very fast, because it's always there, you know, integrating people, you know, holding them accountable, or valuing them in a certain way. All of it have been HR priorities, but the whole thing needs to happen in double quick.
Yes.
The horizons for doing any of these interventions have really come down. Okay, like when we started institutional meets in the company to as an integrative phenomena. Here today, we will need to do that much more. We need to do it at the board level, at the management council level, and at the institutional member level. I think this is a similar challenge which is faced by many of the organizations. It keeps calling for offsites, go there. And offsites in terms of the depth of connect is becoming a lot better. Okay, earlier it was just take them to ECR, OMR, and you know, play around and have some fun and come back kind of a thing. Now I see in the last 6 months, I would have done at least six offsites with my clients, where you are asked to anchor sessions of mind expansion. Okay, which will never happen earlier. It will be, you know, get
fun.
The family, get fun and come back kind of a thing. So I see
more retention back then.
Absolutely. In my view, I think a lot of depth building is starting to happen in
which is good.
Organization. And they want the depth building as much to happen digitally as possible. You see the high tech, high touch, as they call, which used to be a slogan earlier. Now it's becoming a necessity for survival in organizations. You know, the amount of opportunities, especially the Gen Z guys get today. You know, you join a company, within a year, you're expected to deliver something. You're supposed to evolve an identity for yourself. By the time, the organizational identity would have changed.
Yes.
So the tremendous transience that our people are living in, both imposed by the environment and by the direction of the company
I'm glad
itself.
The way you said it is like an opportunity. It's not,
yeah.
This chaos is the opportunity.
Yeah, chaos is a big opportunity.
Yes.
I think, you know, everybody is growing and like everybody is transforming. And even, you know, to search for constancy in this ever-changing variable nature of the industry is to be a great challenge, especially for HR as an industry. If today this industry is growing, this year first time we'll be crossing 200,000 or 2 lakh crores of size, it is because the need for flexibility, the need for quick efforts to transform people, transform organizations. We just launched transition coaching as a new product. There's been a big takeoff, you know, where you blend assessment and coaching together and offer. Anybody who goes through a transition, companies are putting them through this transition coaching academy of us. And that to me will be the need of the day.
It's very powerful. Because especially the 40-year-olds who say, that, okay, the younger ones, the Gen Z, Gen Ys are doing extremely well. This transition coaching becomes very important in an organization.
That's right. Yeah.
And do you think people should fear this? Do companies have to invest in transition?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because they are sometimes very unfair. You know, they say you're over 40, you're a little over. I mean,
well, it's not the age. In fact, if you see today, when we launched this 30 under 30, 40 under 40, one of the things I asked them, maybe choose a 60 over 60.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, the lifespans are actually increasing. You'll be surprised. While you have, you know, young kids who are coming in are able to take leadership positions early enough.
Yes.
You have the lifespans which are expanding.
People are living longer.
That's
and
right.
And there's no concept of retirement.
That's right. And there are many companies which, I mean, in initially American companies, of course, had this thing that you can't discriminate based on age. You see, today, the 60 to 65 has become as productive a phase as the, you know, the 40s, which was earlier. You know, the new 60s is the earlier 40s today.
Yeah,
okay. So to me, I think blending in this workforce with the Gen Z and everybody has been a major challenge. You know, you have generation gaps in families, you see, and generation gaps in organization, which need to be glued together by the HR function. To me, it's a very, very important thing in the modern organizations, because you have the span of age of the people now extends from almost 21 to
76, 77
kind of a thing. So to me, that's a very important challenge demographically. And in terms of technologically, the challenge is you have people, every organization now wants to have a tech team within themselves. Yeah. This idea that,
absolutely,
you know, I'll need to have an anchorage within my organization. Vis-a-vis, I can buy out everything kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So today I see increasingly organizations generating tech force by themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's another important trend in my view. So like, tech people, integrating them with the rest of the lot, the erstwhile thing of outsourcing based tech growth, which
over.
Was there, is over now. There are companies which are proud to say that Indian market is important for us, which is earlier not the case.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't touch India with a barge pole kind of a scenes. The rates are becoming closer to the international rates today, what they are getting. And I think if you really saw the NASSCOM report, hardly 3% export rise.
Yes.
For the industry.
Yes.
But the industry has grown at 10%, which would mean that the domestic market for them is becoming a lot more. And it, in my view, is a good trend.
You made a very interesting point that you're a life cycle manager. In a sense, you can start at 18 to 21 and end at 77.
That's right.
That's what you want to compete in. And will tech solve this? I mean, I think even 60-year-olds can be as efficient as a 40-year-old or a 30-year-old.
Absolutely.
Is there an intervention that you can offer in tech to for organizations not to have empathy and compassion, because then they'll think I'm being a mindfulness coach here. So how do you bring out efficiency?
Reverse mentoring is the mantra forward.
Yes.
You know, where organizations traditionally have been taught to think that the big people mentor the young kids kind of a
That's
thing.
That's over.
Today, the reverse mentoring is a very, very important aspect, where you actually have the young kids who are coming in, they mentor their bosses, especially with the newest technologies, newest gadgets, the newest principles.
Yes.
They're able to reverse mentor. So in our Zombies leadership program, which we recently kicked off, engagement product, we launched something called Workplace of Winners. In a competition to some of the others who are doing the engagement surveys and stuff like that. We actually did mentorship. We also did reverse mentorship. Reverse mentorship was received so well by around 250 CHROs we put together in the Zombie workshop last week. And they all have started enjoying it. So in my view, an organization to embed process of mentoring and reverse mentoring is one way to go to handle you know, these huge chasms as you see between the workforce.
I got it. So your point is, there is transience, there is chaos, there is, but there's a need to use data to use the life cycle of people very
well,
and that's an opportunity. So are you a firm believer that tech is just an enabler of people's efficiency, or would a lot of people in the US today, especially India listens to a lot from the Silicon Valley, do you see that these things like AI will take away a lot of jobs?
No, AI taking away jobs, that threat is gone.
Okay.
Yeah, AI will take away certain perspectives.
Yes.
In my view,
absolutely.
The companies which can use AI powerfully will be the survivors in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the present, which is becoming, even in our industry, like all of our 6 digital assets are transformed using AI platforms, all the 6 of them. The SaaS wave now is giving way to the AI wave, as you would call. But I would say one thing which is remaining constant from the day I passed out of my XLRA in 1984, when the first book on HR got written, Designing and Managing Human Resource Systems, one thing which Professor Rao would have said in that, which in a way is getting rediscovered, he said, the key element in a HR function is, can you bring in strong dyadic relationships between the boss and the subordinate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a company is really made up of these relationships between the boss and the subordinate. To me, I think with the tech world, they're rediscovering investment in the boss-subordinate relationship, which, you know, if you're able to do that, you know, across the, even this OKR model, objectives and key results, really focuses on building this relationship glue, which I think the world is rediscovering, the corporate world is rediscovering, and all their energies are going to build these things because they think that is the best retention tool available to them. If you are, you know, you quit because of your boss, you remain because of your boss kind of thing. So tech can play a very supportive role. Today the HRMSs, new age HRMSs, are all playing on role clarity, alignment of objectives in the sideways, upwards and things like that. To me, I think the more tech happens, the more personalized the culture needs to become, in my view.
Would you say that your success, you're in the business of HR, would you say your success has been because you manage people very well? Because you see a lot of startups that don't have teams, that teams come and go. Would you say that's been core to your success?
Absolutely. See, now in this new avatar, we've built around 790 people together and 36,000 deputies. It's very important that the original MOFA value of people integration, co-creation remains in CLHR. If CLHR has chosen to take the same vision we had for ourselves earlier in MOFA, often they call themselves MOFA version 3, mainly because of the same values of dignity, transparency, diversity and growth being embedded in the new CLHR. We will do the public issue in the next 5-6 months when we intend to be listed in BSE, NSE. And we believe that with that infusion of a lot more capital into the company, we will be number one in this country, not only in terms of size, but in terms of quality, in terms of the ownership each of the members have to the organization. Mm. And we will make an impact around the world.
Okay. As is very early. With the tools, techniques, technologies available today, what would the younger self, younger Mr. Pandiyarajan have done? Would it have been easier to scale up faster, better? What are some things?
Oh, no, it is much faster now. You're able to, you know, what I did over 18 years to move from a 5 lakh revenue to a 1,000 crore revenue. Now today companies are born and within 5 years they're able to hit the 1,000 crores. Okay, we have taken 9 years to cross 1,100 crores at this point in time. But I think growing at a 50% CAGR is eminently possible in this industry. And we also can grow by acquisitions, which we never did last time. We are able to do acquisitions. We've already done 2 and we intend to do another 3 in the coming financial year. And growing by acquisitions, integrating to the core CLHR, In my view, will be our competitive advantage.
Okay, are you feeling more at home as a business person than the politics for the last 10, 15 years?
Yeah, I've never regretted being in politics. Yeah, I was there in politics for 10 years. I've been an MLA twice and minister for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a checkbox.
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's in some sense, politics is to me macro HR. And HR is enterprise-wide and individual, micro HR is at the individual level. Macro HR is to me at the society level, and politics is nothing but macro HR.
Yes.
Very highly transferable skill sets from the HR function to politics and from politics into the HR
What would that
function.
Be? I was about to ask you that question. Now in your second stint, what's some of the things that you learned in politics that you're bringing here?
One, I think in terms of knowing your constituency, knowing your identity, and defining the culture, what you wish to have. Parties have their identities, parties have their culture, and governance principles, which can be highly transplanted to the organizational world, in my view. And of course, a macro understanding of social realities, to me, is an extremely powerful tool for me when I come back here. And also, of course, to know how to work with governments. In the sense, governments are large clientele for us, and with increasing degree of skilling, for instance. Skilling in this country is largely driven by the government funds. Absolutely. Almost 21,000 crores get spent in skilling
by the
government.
Are you going to play a role in that? Is CLHR going to play a role?
We are in skilling. We have started CL Skills, which is one of the subsidiaries. We are working with around 6 government schemes already, and we also working with CSR fund-based skill development and institutional skill development. We've launched another 2 digital properties, ProSculpt and Helivate, mainly for institutional skilling. So I think in skilling, whatever your political and more importantly governance understanding can be tremendously transferable to this industry. Many of them have not been able to get it right, the skilling part of it in this country. And I believe that the macro understanding of governance can tremendously help CLHR into making a leadership mark in this industry. So I think, I don't regret it, but at the same time, decided to move away and
build another company, which is good.
That's right. And this time it will be a lot more broader held company, listed company. And we already have a bubbling team, as you see, headquarters is Bangalore and we are now having around 790 people who are full-time, 36,000 people who are deputies into other organizations. And I believe that in the next 1 year, we will be within the top 5 in the industry here.
Now, fantastic. My last question to you is your influences. Obviously, you've gone through trials, tribulations, success. You've also had a tick box on the politics side.
Yeah.
What are some of the influences that you want to share with us? It can be people, it can be history, it can be books, it can be movies.
Yeah, the person who to a large extent mentored me was V. Krishnamurthy, who was ex-chairman of Maruti, SAIL and all that. I had a pleasure of working with him very closely for 3 years. And I think he's the one who, in a way, uncovered my latent entrepreneurial strength. I mean, for someone like him to vest in me the authority, travel to anywhere in the world, discover this EPC industry. For someone, though I'm an engineer, never been in engineering, to understand that industry, he's the one who mentored me, guided me. He gave me the confidence that you can work with people from different races. How a Japanese will give you business, how a European will be different. You know, we used to have long lunches with him. And in my view, that used to be tremendous mentoring sessions. And now all that, to me, I've always held it in grace. And among the books, of course, many books I have been influenced by. And one of it, if I have to mention, it's The World is Flat, which I think changed my perspective to industry quite a bit.
Thomas Friedman,
that was one. And of course, I've been deeply influenced by many of the biographies which I've read. The Devu guys, Every Street is Paved with Gold. That's another one.
Anything in Tamil?
Yeah, Tamil, of course, I've been a voracious leader. I've also been a writer in Tamil, author in Tamil. And in Tamil, if I were to think of one book which I would have read, reread, and things like that, it would be the Wisdom Out of Thirukkural. You know, Thirukkural is one of our ancient texts. It's almost 3,000 years. And every time somebody rewrites Thirukkural, you know, a new perspective on Thirukkural, it is phenomenally, inspiring in my view. So that I would say, and I would also say the kind of perspectives which some of the modern writers bring in Tamil, I keep in touch with that. Sujata, for instance, has been much as, especially as science fiction based things, you know, to even know, think that a guy predicted an AI revolution 25 years back is to me very well, not very well known around. Sujata was actually a R&D head of Bharat Electronics at some point.
I'm going to check out became, that person though.
Yeah, Sujata, especially his science fiction, which he, you know, very unsung hero, I would say. But, you know, he's one who has influenced me phenomenally.
You met that person?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, actually, he passed away about 10 years back. Okay. But I think he is one guy who is an electronic engineer, and I'm also an electronic engineer. And we used to have a lot of things to share. And he's one of the popular writers in Tamil, though, of course.
But was that, was it written in Tamil?
In only Tamil. He never wrote in any other language.
Fantastic. So for a person and coming from Tamil 30 years ago, writing about AI 30 years ago.
Phenomenal. What AI would be, kind of a thing. He's a visionary par excellence. But of course, his Tamil was very racy and very youth centric in those days. And to me, I think these are some of the influences.
No, sir. I mean, this has been a pleasure for me because I've been wanting to interview you for a very long time. We've always spoken on the phone. Thank you for this opportunity. If anything, you startups out there have learned, life is transient, embrace chaos, and that's the opportunity. And AI is not going to kill you.
You know, AI will be a great enabler in my view. I think, I don't know. Already, you know, these people start talking about the negatives of AI, limitations of AI. And I would imagine this whole pressures and counter pressures will lead to a great opportunity for India, especially in my view. And I think most of the pioneering work in AI is going to happen from India. And that will be good for us, good for the country.
And that's music to my ears. Ask questions, I'll get Mr. Pandiyarajan to answer it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.